everybody. Mike Malloy here. Thanks very much for tuning in. I'm glad you could make it. Has the freak show started up in New Hampshire yet? Has it? God, we may get to a little bit of that a little bit later on. I have a hard time focusing at all on what passes for a Republican candidate's debate. I don't care what it's for. It can be for a county commission. They're all going to say the same thing as if they're running for the presidency. You know the cliches. You know what they're going to say. The Democrats, pretty much the same. So anyway, we may focus on a little bit. I have a bit of business for you. AM 1090 in Seattle, they do this yearly forum. And here's the announcement for this year's. It'll be July 23rd, Saturday night, July 23rd. You can get information at am1090seattle.com. am1090seattle.com. I'll be there along with Stephanie Miller, Mike Papantonio, Norman Goldman, Randy Rhodes, and Ron Reagan.
And me.
And Kathy. Well, but you won't be on the stage. Maybe you will. I don't know. So if anyone who lives in the Seattle area, that means the entire West Coast, come on up. Go to am1090seattle.com to get ticket information. All right? 40 years ago today, June 13th, 1971. Man, seems like yesterday. There was a ripple in the press world. The New York Times began publishing the Pentagon Papers. No one other than the editorial board at the New York Times knew exactly what was being published. They were secret documents, top secret government documents that showed the lies and the deceit and the murderous untruths that would put 58,000 Americans in their graves and 2.5 million Vietnamese and probably another 500,000 Cambodians and Laotians. All because of the lies that were told by Lyndon Johnson and his administration, Richard Nixon and his administration. In the weeks that followed the publication, Nixon worked to stop the continuing publishing of these papers, with the Supreme Court ultimately ruling against prior restraint. Daniel Ellsberg leaked the Pentagon Papers later that month, June 13th, 1971, got them to Senator Mike Gravel. Remember him? Who late in the evening of June 29th to June 30th entered them into the congressional record. At the time, he was conducting a filibuster against the draft. Mike Gravel, former two-term senator from Alaska, said today, quote, "It's particularly ridiculous that the government is putting out a version of the Pentagon Papers now, because the government approach to Ellsberg and myself is being echoed in their approach to Bradley Manning, the alleged source of the WikiLeaks revelations. Our oaths bind us to loyalty to the Constitution and not to government officials who lie us into wars," end quote. The difference, of course, is that Daniel Ellsberg was targeted for assassination by Richard Nixon using a hit team comprised of former Bay of Pigs operatives in the CIA. Ellsberg had his life ripped to pieces, his psychiatrist's office invaded. All the things that were done to Ellsberg at the time were illegal. All the things that are being done to Bradley Manning and possibly you are now legal under the USA Patriot Act. your doctor's office is, and the records that may be kept therein regarding your physical or mental condition, is wide open under the USA Patriot Act. President Barack Obama can order you assassinated, here or abroad. You can be detained illegally indefinitely. So, if you think that things have gotten better, things have gotten progressively worse since Ellsberg released the papers. Progressively worse. Today, the Guardian of the UK has a piece, an op-ed piece written by Ellsberg, titled "Why the Pentagon Papers Matter Now." That article states, quote, "The declassification and online release today of the full original version of the Pentagon Papers, those are the 7,000-page top-secret Pentagon study of U.S. decision-making in Vietnam from 1945 to 1967, comes 40 years after I gave it to 19 newspapers and to Senator Mike Gravel. Gravel entered what I had given him in the Congressional Record and later published near all of it with Beacon Press. Together with the newspaper coverage and a government printing office edition that was heavily redacted but overlapped the Senator Gravel edition, most of the material has been available to the public and scholars since 1971. In other words, today's declassification of the entire study comes 36 to 40 years overdue. Yet, unfortunately, it happens to be peculiarly timely that this study gets attention and goes online just now. That's because we're mired again in wars, especially in Afghanistan, remarkably similar to the 30-year conflict in Vietnam. And we don't have comparable documentation and insider analysis to enlighten us on how we got here and where it's likely to go. What we need released this month are the Pentagon Papers of Iraq and Afghanistan and Pakistan and Yemen and Libya. We're not likely to get them. They probably don't yet exist, at least in the useful form of the earlier ones. But the original studies on Vietnam are a surprisingly not bad substitute, definitely worth learning from. You can go to the Guardian of the UK to get this interview, or go online and get the Pentagon Papers. And then think about what we're dealing with today. Ellsberg recently said, "All the crimes Nixon committed against me, which forced his resignation facing impeachment, are now legal. That includes burglarizing my former psychoanalyst's office, warrantless wiretapping, using the CIA against an American citizen in the U.S., and authorizing a White House hit squad to incapacitate me totally," quote unquote. "All the above were to prevent me from exposing guilty secrets of his own administration that went beyond the Pentagon Papers. But under George W. Bush and Barack Obama, with the Patriot Act, the FISA Amendment Act, and for the hit squad, President Obama's executive orders, they have all become legal."
right here, right now, Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. I just flipped over to CNN for a minute to look at the this collection of clowns and morons. Oh, my God. At the New Hampshire debate. And, of course, I think the first question of out of the box is how bigoted they are. And with one or two exceptions, they're all bigoted. They're all talking. These are Republicans who believe in states' rights. They're all talking about how they would actively prevent state. New Hampshire is a state with veto-proof Republican majorities, and yet they have chosen not to rescind New Hampshire's marriage laws that allow same-sex couples to do the same thing as opposite-sex couples. So all these candidates are standing in New Hampshire. I'm talking about how they would, you know, they're weasel words, but how they would use the power of the federal government to interfere with the state's determinations. Isn't that nice? Somebody sent this to me. It is, it's about the debate tonight. And there's one question for each of these clowns that whoever wrote this, and I wish I could tell you who wrote it. It was probably something at Think Progress, or I don't have the author. But here are the questions that the author of this, we're hoping each of these clowns gets asked tonight. For Mitt Romney, here's his question. You've positioned yourself as a leader on job creation, releasing a web video today attacking President Obama on the bleak jobs picture. But while you were governor, Massachusetts was ranked 47th on job creation. While you were at Bain, the company Bain, the company slashed jobs. And in 2009, when hundreds of thousands of jobs were on the line, when General Motors and Chrysler were struggling in survival, you penned an op-ed titled, "Let Detroit Go Bankrupt." The government's rescue of these companies helped return them to profitability and save jobs. Given your record, how can Americans trust you on job creation? Well, okay. Here's a question for Tim Pawlenty. Last week, you presented an economic plan that would dramatically cut the top individual income tax rate and the corporate tax rate, depriving the government of up to $7.8 trillion in tax revenue. And that's on top of the $2.5 trillion cost of extending all of the Bush tax cuts. You said you would pay for the cuts with a nearly unprecedented economic growth rate of 5% a year for 10 years that even you yourself say is a, quote, an aspiration, end quote. But in case we were unable to achieve that growth rate, how would you balance the budget with these massive new tax cuts, especially since you've taken military cuts off the table? How indeed, Pawlenty. Boy, you look at this crew on CNN, on the stage. I mean, I have never seen such a collection of pasty-faced white people and the godfather of pizza, who's a pasty-faced black person, standing there like a bunch of, I don't know, clowns. Michelle Bachmann, here's her question. You voted for the Republican Medicare privatization plan, but later said there is an asterisk by your vote because you said, quote, "I'm concerned about shifting the cost burden to senior citizens," end quote. Indeed, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office says seniors would pay thousands of dollars more each year for their health care starting in 2022. By now, nearly all of your potential opponents have come out in support of the plan. Do you fully support it? If not, why? Well, of course she supports it. This is to stroke and jerk around the old people back home in Minnesota. Of course she supports it. She is as much of a corporate-controlled capitalist as any of them. Rick Santorum, here's your question. You gruesome bastard. Several recent polls show that a majority of Americans are in favor of gay marriage. Republicans here in New Hampshire have veto-proof majorities in both chambers, but chose to not pursue repealing gay marriage in order to focus on jobs and the economy. Was that the right decision? Santorum was asked a question. when I tuned in, and apparently he is very content with Jesus, he scares me. He just, I don't know. He looks like somebody who is in the SS. It'd be so easy to put a death's head uniform on this guy, and he would fit right in, wouldn't he? I mean, honest to God. Let's be real here. Next time you take a look at Rick Santorum, he's got that kind of tall, muscular, blank-faced look that says anything you want me to do, anything. I believe the absurdities. I'm ready to commit the atrocities. Just point me in the right direction. We'll be right back with the remaining three of the clowns here tonight in New Hampshire. Stay with us. It really does. 25 before the hour. This hour is sponsored. Matter of fact, all 3 hours today are sponsored by Ian McShane. And, ORG! We really thank him for that. Ian McShane is our sponsor this hour, next hour, and the third hour tonight. All right, back to these questions for the clowns that are standing on the stage in New Hampshire. It's just astonishing to listen to some of this during the break. Here's a question for former Godfather Pizza CEO Herman Cain from here in Georgia. In March, you said you would not appoint a Muslim to a Cain administration's cabinet. And then just this past week on Fox News host Glenn Beck's show, you called for special loyalty oaths for Muslim political appointees, which you would not give to members of other religions. You've also publicly called on Americans to reread, your word, the Constitution. But isn't your singling out of Muslims unconstitutional under the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment? Loyalty oath, son of a bitch. And some of you people still think that I'm pushing the envelope by calling these people fascist. Are you serious? Are you serious? For former House Speaker and serial adulterer, not to mention fave at Tiffany's, Newt Gingrich. Here's your question, punk. Before later backtracking, you famously said that the GOP Medicare privatization plan was right-wing social engineering. You later disavowed these comments and pledged support for the plan. But now, given the fact that numerous polls showing the plan to be unpopular, the blowback Republican lawmakers faced in their home districts over it, and the results of the special election in New York's 26th congressional district, were you right the first time? Now, see, that's a trick question, right, Newt? You evil bastard. Newt looks like caricatures of Satan. Have you ever noticed that? Sans the horns and the red skin and the pointy ears. But he does. His face. He looks like the Christian concept of the devil. And for Ron Paul, here's your question. You poor old bastard, you. You have been very outspoken about your interpretation of the Constitution, passionately arguing that most of what the federal government does today, including Social Security and Medicare, is unconstitutional. As president, Would you work to completely repeal these social safety net programs? You've also suggested the Civil Rights Act was an unconstitutional encroachment on property owners. Would you work to repeal it? What about similar laws like the Voters with Disability Act or the Voting Rights Act? Would you repeal them? Now, the truth is, none of these sorts of questions will be asked tonight. The so-called politicians debate going on in New Hampshire is theater. Nothing but. If you go to CNN and take a look at the crowd, you'll see that everyone is there for a show. And these seven or eight people up on the stage are providing the show. It is substanceless. Did I say that right? Substanceless. It is without any kind of anchor to the real world. Nothing that's being said on the stage. And who's the host? What's the CNN guy's name? White-haired guy, John King. John King is playing his role quite well. But this is what passes for debate in this country. This kind of garbage. What would you do about illegal immigrants? What would you do about what the politicians call gay marriage, what a normal people calls the right of anyone to enter into a contract? Jesus. Oh, well. It's not our... It's not our gig that's playing out with these kinds of debates. This is totally disconnected from you and me. Totally disconnected. We have nothing to do with this. We have nothing to do with the questions. We have nothing to do with the answers. Nothing to do with the candidates. Nothing to do with what they're selling up there. Great big barrels of boiled owl crap is what they're all offering for sale. Did I mention this hour is sponsored by Ian Machane? I think I did. What's his name? Dana Rohrabacher? Isn't he from California? He did it again. Rohrabacher was in Iraq, and Iraqi authorities have asked him to get the hell out of their country. Why? Other than the fact that he is ugly as hell and has terribly bad breath and is a complete moron, why would they? Why? Well, he called for Baghdad to repay the money spent by Washington since the 2003 invasion. So, Republican Representative Dana Rohrabacher, you talk about balls. I mean, you invade a country illegally, blow it to pieces, destroy its entire infrastructure, murder anywhere from 100,000 to 1.5 million of its citizens, create a refugee class that's bordering on 3 million, destroy thousand-year-old antiquities, thousands of years old antiquities, disrupt everything, blow it to pieces, make sure the leader is executed, and then demand of this gutted country, pay us for what we did? I thought reparations were supposed to work the other way. Isn't that what World War II was all about? It was Chapter 2 of World War I, because the German people were forced to pay reparations they could not pay, which gave rise to Adolf Hitler. Oh, I know it was more complicated than that, but you know what I'm saying. So there's Dana Rohrabacher telling the Iraqis to pay us for smashing their country. Rohrabacher, who, by the way, is a member of the Foreign Affairs Committee, U.S. House, he declined to give specifics on how much should be repaid, how long it should take. And a U.S. Embassy spokesman there said that while the mission, the embassy, while they have a responsibility to host congressional visitors, the views of the politicians, quote, do not necessarily express the views of the U.S. administration or even a majority of the Congress, end quote. Iraqi government spokesman Ali al-Dabah told the French news agency, quote, we called the U.S. Embassy yesterday and we told them to ask the congressman to take his ugly ass out of our country. No, I added that last part. We told them to ask the congressman to leave Iraq. Oh, my God. Pay us for what we have done to you. Pay us for the bullets that we have used to kill your children, your men, your women. Pay us for the bombs we have used to blow your buildings and your power grids and your water distribution plants into chunks of concrete. Pay us. Pay us for the oil we've stolen from you and will continue to steal until your fields run dry, which will probably be 40, 50, 60 years from now. Of course, we'll all be dead by then anyway, but pay us. Pay us for all those people in Fallujah that we incinerated with white phosphorus. Pay us. Pay us. Do you know how much that stuff costs? Do you know how hard it is to get your hands on white phosphorus since it has been outlawed by the Geneva Convention on the Conduct of War? Oh, that's right. Never mind. We don't pay any attention to that. Pay us. Pay us for all the electricity we use torturing people in Abu Ghraib and any place else that the dumbass American public doesn't know about yet. But pay us. We invaded your country, blew it to pieces, destroyed everything even remotely resembling a civilized nation. We want you to pay us. Pay us. Wow. Talk about. And hey, George W. Bush, there's one answer, another answer to your question. Why do they hate us? There you go. Your buddy Dana Rohrabacher, the psychopath from California. Astonishing. But very American. Hey, we're Americans, goddammit. We invade someplace, they're going to pay us for all those bullets and bombs and stuff we used. We're Americans.
The fact is there's these people that they said they had to bomb, when in fact it was just a wedding. The fact is there's these prisoners buried in the sand, mass murdered in containers. The fact is, in Afghanistan, more died than in New York, and most of them civilians. Hail Caesar! This is what you're fighting for. The king of Death Row, Texas, elected by his brother-in-law. Hail Caesar! This is what you're fighting for. Oil money, Enron, the American Empire!
Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Ian McShane. As are the next two. What else we got? God, I hate Mondays. I really do, because the reason I hate Mondays is not the getting up early, because we don't have to. School's out. But it's like the toilet of information has backed up over the weekend. You know what I'm saying by that? All the garbage and debris that flows in a given week through the collective consciousness in this country, thanks to television and to a lesser degree newspapers. All that debris, detritus, junk, crap, garbage. It starts to swirl and back up. Sometimes Saturday, and then Sunday, it becomes like a dammed up flood waiting to be released. And then on Monday morning, boy, as soon as you have those morning shows on Monday morning, CNN and this crazy ass Joe Scarborough over on MSNBC, and then you have the three networks weighing in, and all of a sudden somebody, I don't know, pulls a clot of something that had everything backed up, and it just comes rushing at you, right? Just this tidal wave of garbage, crap, junk. Ah! That's why I hate Mondays. 40 years ago, as I mentioned, the Pentagon Papers, the New York Times began publishing them. And as we speak, Barack Obama's administration is aggressively going after Bradley Manning, an Army private. He's been imprisoned for a year now on suspicion of having passed classified data to WikiLeaks. And Thomas Drake, a former official of the National Security Agency, pled guilty Friday to a misdemeanor of misusing the agency's computer system by providing information to a newspaper reporter. And as Stephen Cohn, writing in the New York Times today, said that the tension between protecting true national security secrets and ensuring the public's right to know it about abuses of authority is not new. As a matter of fact, ta-da, listen to this. In the winter of 1777, months after the signing of the Declaration of Independence, the American warship Warren was anchored outside of Providence, Rhode Island. On board, 10 revolutionary sailors and Marines met in secret, not to plot against the King's armies, but to discuss their concern about the commander of the Continental Navy, Commodore Esek Hopkins. Now, these 10 sailors and Marines knew the risks. Hopkins came from a powerful family. His brother was a former governor of Rhode Island and a signer of the Declaration of Independence. Hopkins had participated in the torture of captured British sailors. According to what his subordinates put in a petition, he, quote, treated prisoners in the most inhuman and barbarous manner, end quote. One whistleblower, a Marine captain named John Grannis, was selected to present the petition to the Continental Congress, which voted March 26, 1777, to suspend Hopkins from his post. And the case didn't end there. Hopkins was furious. He immediately retaliated. He filed a criminal libel suit in Rhode Island against the whistleblowers, these 10 revolutionary sailors and Marines. Two of them, who happened to be in Rhode Island, Samuel Shaw, a midshipman, and Robert Marvin, a third lieutenant, were jailed. In a petition read to Congress on July 23, 1778, they pleaded that they had been, quote, arrested for doing what they then believed and still believe was nothing but their duty, end quote. And later that month, without any recorded dissent, this brand new Congress in this brand new country enacted America's first whistleblower protection law. Quote, that it is the duty of all persons in the service of the United States, as well as all other inhabitants thereof, to give the earliest information to Congress or any other proper authority of any misconduct, frauds, or misdemeanors committed by any officers or persons in the service of these states which may come to their knowledge, end quote. And Congress didn't stop there. We're talking 1778. Didn't stop there. Congress wanted to ensure that the whistleblowers would have excellent legal counsel to fight against the libel charges. And despite the financial hardships of the new republic, it authorized payment for the legal fees of Samuel Shaw, the midshipman, and Richard Marvin, the third lieutenant. Well, Congress did not hide behind government secrecy edicts, even though the nation was at war against the British. Instead, it authorized the full release of all records related to the removal of Hopkins, the guy who was the torturer. No so-called state secret privilege was invoked. The whistleblowers did not need to use a Freedom of Information Act to obtain documents to vindicate themselves. And there was no attempt to hide the fact that whistleblowers had accused a Navy commander of mistreating prisoners. 2 centuries later, Supreme Court Justice William Douglas praised the founders' commitment to freedom of speech, and he wrote, quote, "The dominant purpose of the First Amendment was to prohibit the widespread practice of government suppression of embarrassing information," end quote. So, given all this history, why do you suppose that a constitutional scholar like President Barack Obama is continuing his prosecution of Bradley Manning, not to mention the torture of the man? Hour. This hour is sponsored by Ian McShane. Thank you, sir. We appreciate it. I think one more example to consider of the incompetency, the criminality, I guess, of the Obama administration, really. At ProPublica the other day, they mentioned that as the Bahraini government continues its crackdown on largely Shiite pro-democracy groups, the Obama administration is reaffirming its friendship with the Crown Prince of Bahrain, who is Sunni. More Shiites were arrested last week, about 50 medical workers. We mentioned this, doctors and nurses, charged by the government of supporting the pro-democracy protests. How? Because when injured, half-dead, dying, wounded protesters were brought to the hospitals, the doctors, remembering their Hippocratic oath, would treat them. And now they are under arrest and are being charged with treason, which in this backward-ass country means beheading if they are convicted. But anyway, the Crown Prince of Bahrain paid a visit to the White House last week. Remember? We talked about it. Also met with State Department officials as well as Obama. And when he met with Obama, Obama urged this king or this prince or this monarch to, quote, hold accountable, end quote, those responsible for the human rights abuses, without specifying who to be held accountable. Well, the miserable son of a bitch sitting right across from you, Mr. Obama. I mean, it's a monarchy. You've got the crown prince. You're right cheek to jowl with this murderous son of a bitch, and you're telling him that people should be held accountable What is he? Chop liver? He's the guy doing it. What is up with this president, ladies and gentlemen? What is up with the president of the United States? Jesus God. Oh, well, you know. Bahrain has been a close ally of the United States. Isn't that always the case? You find me a murderous regime. I don't care what continent it's on. Find it for me. And I will tell you without, I mean, you don't even have to tell me the name of the regime. I will tell you that they are allies of the United States. Every single time. Every time. But Bahrain, well, you know, that's where we host, that's where we nest the U.S. Navy's Fifth Fleet. What does the Fifth Fleet do? Oh, my goodness. Ready to launch strikes against anybody out there. Iran? Syria? You know, the bad dictatorships. Bad as far as the U.S. capitalists are concerned. Now, the ones that continue to gouge the American public because we're stupid enough to still depend on oil, of course, the Saudi royal family, they behead people too. But, you know, I mean, come on, it's Saudi Arabia. Jesus Christ, come on, Malloy. What? Come on, come on, come on, get real. What are you talking about? Woo! The strongest condemnation that's come from Obama was back in May when he said that Bahrain's, quote, mass arrests and brute force were at odds with the universal rights of the Bahrain citizens. At odds? Mass arrests? Murder? Killing? Slaughtering? Shooting down in the street? At odds? Is that what you call that, Mr. Obama? At odds? Hillary Clinton said, quote, Bahrain is a partner. That's our partner. And a very important one to the United States. We are supportive of a national dialogue and the kinds of important work the Crown Prince has been doing in his nation. And we look forward to it continuing. We look forward to it continuing. We look forward to it continuing, Hillary Clinton said. Doo-doo. Oh, in a move that was praised by the Obama administration, the government of Bahrain, that is the ruling family, recently lifted martial law. That was supposed to be a signal of a return to normalcy so that they could get the Formula One race scheduled to be held in October reinstated. Like the Le Mans race, Formula One race scheduled in October. Now, it doesn't mean anything about lifting an emergency law. In Syria, they've lifted their emergency law in April, and thousands of protesters have been killed since. But isn't this always the case? You show me, or show your good friend. You don't know me from Adam's house cat, but the two of you, go with your good friend. Take a dart. Throw it at a map of the world. Go see where the dart landed. Name the country. Then do a quick search. Don't let your friend know you're doing this. Do a quick search. You know, he's got to leave the room or she's got to leave the room. Do a quick search. Find out the name of the country. Find out how repressive and to what degree that country is in violation of even the most elementary of human rights. Not to mention civil rights. Jesus, civil rights. Are you kidding me? Start with human rights. Then tell your friend to come back in the room and say, okay. Then go down the list of atrocities and say to your friend, now, is this country an ally of the United States or some country we'd like to change? And see what the answer is. Bahrain. The Formula One governing body announced it would not hold a race in Bahrain because participants had security concerns and because of all those human rights violations, you know, shooting people down in the street because they are Shia and they're asking for changes in the government. Good God. And then, of course, this discovery of billions of dollars in cash stolen by Bush administration officials. Okay. Or contractors or their counterparts in Iraq. But $6.6 billion. Now, if that's a number being advertised as missing, then you can bet your ass it's probably 10 times that or 20 times that. This is a number they throw out there that American media tosses out there for you and I to go, I'll be damned. I'll be damned. But John Ponder, writing at Pensato Review, has a little bit different take from the LA Times and the New York Times and, you know, the establishment corporate media. We'll talk about it when we come back. Okay, stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. So the story, it's out there pretty much any place you want to go to find it. But John Ponder at Pensato Review calls it a shocking bit of news. Indeed, John. And he's not referring to the fact that in 2003 and 2004, the Bush administration appropriated, took $12 billion in $100 bills from the Federal Reserve, as a matter of public record, shrink-wrapped it into bricks, loaded the money, said to weigh 363 tons, into C-130 Hercules transport planes and flew it into the war zone in Iraq. $12 billion in $100 bills. Now, that was the bribe money. But when you have 300 tons of money flying into a hot war zone, what are the odds that all of that money is going to go to the swine and the scum and the rat bastards it's intended for? What are the chances that other swine and scum and other rat bastards will just reach in and sample, you know? What? Look at that, man. I never saw a stack of hundreds that deep. Woo! As Ponder puts it, the shock of learning that the Bush administration undertook what was undoubtedly the largest airlift of cash in history has worn off. Nobody cares about that anymore. George W. Bush is a great president. He was wonderful. He rescued us from terror. He did. And he went after Saddam Hussein, who planned 9/11, planned the whole thing. He did, right there in Baghdad. Yes, he did. George W. Bush is a wonderful man. Now, what is shocking now is investigators say they have accounted for just under half the loot. And that leaves $6.6 billion that was lost, stolen by Bush officials or private contractors or their Iraqi counterparts. Probably doesn't matter a whole lot, does it? Anyway, according to reports, this month the Pentagon and the Iraqi government are finally closing the books on the program that handled all those Benjamins. And despite years of audits and investigations, oh yeah, of course, U.S. defense officials still cannot say what happened to $6.6 billion in cash. By the way, that's enough money to run the Los Angeles Unified School District or the Chicago Public Schools for a year. But, you know, it's just chump change. When capitalist America wants to play, they play. They go to the Federal Reserve, say, print the goddamn money. Give me the money. I want 300 tons of $100 bills. Give it to me. Give it to me now. Well, can't you go to Congress? Give me the money. Okay. Just checking. Just checking. For the first time, federal auditors are now suggesting that some or all the cash that may have been stolen, or may have been stolen, not just mislaid in an accounting error. Really? You think? You think? You don't think it was an accounting error? No? You think it was stolen? Maybe? Perhaps? Huh? Could be? Stuart Bowen, who's Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction. That's an office created by Congress. A lot of money in reconstructing countries you've just blown into a billion pieces, right? Oh, man, a lot of money there. Anyway, he says the missing $6.6 billion may be, quote, the largest theft of funds in national history, end quote. No, you don't say the largest theft of funds in national history. Now, apparently, this is a growing embarrassment to the Pentagon. And apparently it's an irritant to the relations between Washington and Baghdad. Iraqi officials are threatening to go to court to reclaim the money, which came from Iraqi oil sales, seized Iraqi assets, and surplus funds from the United Nations Oil for Food program. But I thought it came from the Federal Reserve. No, that was just the $12 billion that was flown into, never mind, Malloy, it's way too complicated for you. Anyway, it's fair to say that Congress, which has already shelled out $61 billion of U.S. taxpayer money for similar reconstruction and development projects, the U.S. Congress is getting a little pissed off about this, too, I guess. Henry Waxman, who presided over hearings on waste and fraud and abuse in Iraq 6 years ago when he headed the House Government Reform Committee, he said, quote, Congress is not looking forward to having to spend billions of our money to make up for billions of their money that we can't account for and can't seem to find. Who would send 363 tons of cash into a war zone?
We try to hustle them, try to bust them, try to cuss them. The cops want someone to bust it down on Orleans Avenue. Another day, another dollar, another wall, another towel went up where the homeless had their homes. So we prayed we've been a different God as there are flowers. But we call religion our friend. We're so worried about saving our souls, afraid that God will take his toll, that we forget to begin.
because liberal is a good word. It's more Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Ian McShane. It's easy for you to say, Mike. Try English. Ian McShane is our sponsor this hour, as last. Thank you, sir. What else we got? Remember, was it last Friday, Thursday or Friday, that we talked about Barack Obama refusing to undo the directive signed by Bush allowing oil and mineral and gas and all these other predatory bastards to go into the public lands and just timber and, you know, just destroy it. Just chew it up. Destroy it. And Obama's just sitting back saying, oh, well, you know, I don't want to interfere in the great job-producing engine of American enterprise or whatever. I don't even know what his justification anymore. Former Interior Secretary Bruce Babbitt, last week in a speech, said that Obama's failure to mount a persuasive counterattack to the Republicans, Babbitt's word, radical assault on the country's environmental safeguards amounts to, quote, a form of appeasement, end quote. No kidding. No kidding. As the Times reports, it is rare for someone of Mr. Babbitt's stature to use such caustic language about a sitting president from his own party. But he was reflecting growing concern that the president and his top aides have decided, for political reasons, to back away from the fight. Oh, Jesus, really? I mean, what a shock that is. A little bit of effort required on the part of the Obama administration and Barack Obama himself, and this guy turns around and runs his ass back into the weeds. Way to go, Mr. President. Once again. Once again. In recent months, the president and his administration, what have they said on the problem of climate change? What have they done about efforts to regulate industrial pollution? How about toxic coal ash? How about mountaintop mining? What is the Obama administration doing about those attacks on our nest? What are they doing? Huh? Anyway, Bruce Babbitt's main complaint involved Mr. Obama's failure to do more to conserve open space and protect sensitive areas threatened by imminent development. And according to the Times, he was particularly dismayed, Bruce Babbitt was, by the White House's acceptance of a Republican budget rider pushed by the oil and gas industry, undercutting the Interior Department's authority to identify and set aside valuable public lands for future designation as permanent wilderness. Permanent wilderness? Burn the goddamn place down! Set it on fire! Get rid of the trees! You know there's gas down there! Once we're finished burning every damn living thing out of Arizona, you know, trees and rodents and stuff. Once we're finished with that, think how easy it's going to be to frack it. We're going to frack Arizona. Yeah, we are. We're all going to get rich fracking Arizona. Bruce Babbitt said Obama still represented, quote, the best and likely only hope for meaningful progress. Really? On energy and the environment. Barack Obama still represents the best and likely only hope for meaningful progress. When? We're waiting for him to be reelected? Is that it? Well, what does Bruce Babbitt know that we don't? Now, the Bush might as well be, the Obama administration has proposed to limit power plant emissions of toxic pollutants like mercury and impose new rules governing power plant emissions and greenhouse gases? How long do you think it's going to take Barack Obama to turn tail and run from that one? Those three also. How long do you think it'll take? A phone call from the oil and gas industry lobbyist. Mr. President, back off. And that's it. It's gone. Babbitt said Obama should emulate former President Bill Clinton, Babbitt's old boss, who faced similar opposition after the 1994 Republican Revolution became roaring back. This president, ladies and gentlemen, is not going to roar or come back on or about anything. This is Barack Obama, who was the wrong guy, wrong time in the history of the country, but he sure as hell made for good visuals, didn't he? Huh? Hear what happened in America last night? What, man? They elected African-American. No! Get out of town! You're kidding! They did. Wow. The country's really matured, huh? Yeah. And you know what?
What?
This guy is a real progressive. Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah. All of his speeches? You've heard his speeches. Yeah, I did. I heard his speeches. Well, what do you think? Oh, man. He said he'll support union members by walking a picket line with them. That's right. The president of the United States on a picket line. That's what he said. And the treaties with the Russians about reducing nuclear war. Yeah. Yeah, he's going to do that. He's going to close Guantanamo. No. Yes. He said all that. Yes. How about this? Did you ever think the United States would elect someone who said those things? No, I didn't. You know what else he's going to do?
What?
Healthcare. Get out of town! No, that's right. Healthcare. Healthcare reform. He's going to do it. You mean like we have here? Single payer? No. Well, not quite that far. But what he's going to do, he's going to reform a lot of it, and then he's going to have something called the public option. The public what? Public option. What does that mean? That means that you'll, well, I don't know. I think what it means is you'll be able to buy insurance out of a pool or something that's real cheap and get, why don't they just do Medicare for everybody like we have? Well, I don't know. Maybe he'll try that. You think? Yeah, you know why?
Why?
Because he's a progressive. Wow. I can't. And he's African-American?
Yeah.
African-American. In the United States?
Yes.
Oh, damn. Whew. That sounds like a Saturday Night Live skit, doesn't it? Oh, my God. Mr. President. Mr. Barack Obama. I swear to God, you know, you are the biggest disappointment, but I'll just go back to what Bush said. Fool me once, shame on, fool me once, shame on you, fool me, see, do, no, get, fool, if you, won't get fooled again, Mr. Obama, Mr. President, won't get fooled again. Wow. And see, a lot of people who have had enough now, of course, you know, we hear the screaming coming from the wings. Oh, but if you don't vote for Barack Obama, then the Republicans will take over. And think of the Supreme Court and fascism will be here. You gotta vote for him again.
No.
But what about the Supreme Court?
No.
Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me again, or over, won't get fooled again. No, I'm sorry. If I am the one who is informing you, and I know I'm not, you're not stupid. all the things that, not just the stuff we wrote on the blank slate of Barack Obama. You know, I hear that a lot, too. I've said that. But if you go back and look at some of his campaign rhetoric, there's some real stuff in there that was promised. Now, I realize that a president or a candidate for the highest office starts out as a liar. They begin as a liar. They have to lie. They have to lie. And the hope is that the lies are not so egregious and so insane that if that person is your candidate, that he or she won't get elected. So the lies, you know, the lies start out, well, okay, I'm going to close Abu Ghraib, Guantanamo. I'm going to make sure that the U.S. Constitution is followed. These are not war criminals. These are people that were swept up in a net of frenzy. And then when nothing happens, to the contrary, when somebody who is charged with releasing all the government's filthy secrets winds up being tortured and locked up incommunicado by the president who's, oh, well, never mind.
Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Ian McShane. Thank you, Mr. McShane. Remember the day before the 9/11 attacks, Donald Rumsfeld made the astonishing admission that there was $2 trillion that the Pentagon couldn't account for. It was on CBS News at the time. Rumsfeld said, quote, according to some estimates, we cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions. $2.3 trillion, that's $8,000 for every man, woman, and child in America. But so you might say that, you know, the $6 billion is pocket change. You know, $1 trillion is $1,000 billion. So $6 billion, doesn't mean anything. Doesn't mean anything. What I find incredibly interesting was the timing of the admission that over $2 trillion couldn't be accounted for just one day before the 9/11 attacks. And, of course, the attacks kept the story from even making the news at the time. It was finally reported months later, and it still didn't get very much coverage. And back on July 27th, 2010, the story that I just gave you that's in the L.A. Times and the New York Times and CNN, MSNBC Today, a year ago, the Associated Press, U.S. audit finds weakness in Pentagon controls for Iraq funds, $8.7 billion missing. The U.S. Defense Department is unable to properly account for over 90% of the $9.1 billion in Iraqi oil money tapped by the U.S. for rebuilding the war-ravaged nation, according to an audit released Tuesday. So that was a year ago. And as our friend Sheila Samples points out, why is it being treated like a news story now? This story is over a year old. The $8.7 billion or the $6.6 billion. Who in the hell knows? But the bigger story was what happened on September 10th, 2001, when Donald Rumsfeld said that the Pentagon couldn't account for $2.3 trillion in transactions. Is that a bookkeeping error? Is that what that is? Is that just somebody added 9 zeros? Or is it 12? 12 zeros? When they meant to add 3? Is that? Could that? So, who does this to us? Who does this to us, Truth Seeker? You've got to ask yourself at some point, don't you? I mean, maybe not. Maybe denial and avoidance are key here. But if you slip up and go ahead and ask yourself, all right, they've stolen everything out of the economy. They, the banksters, the capitalists, that they can steal everything. Unemployment's out of control. Jobs, I don't care what they say about jobs coming back. Oh, coming back where? Billions, trillions, tens of trillions stolen from any place these sons of bitches can get their hands on it. And now we have this. You know, they cause wars because in the fog of war, the fog comes on little cat feet. The fog of war. Billions, tens of billions, hundreds of billions can be stolen. Where does it go? Where does all this money go? Where have these trillions gone? The money they stole out of the economy, the money they stole that was printed by the Fed, the taxpayer money. What have we spent so far on Afghanistan, Iraq? Is it a trillion? No, it's more than that. Our defense budget, our war budget is 750 billion every year. Where does the money go? Does anybody know? Anybody have any idea? Do any of these piggish candidates that were in New Hampshire tonight, these Republican dogs, did anyone ask them, where are the trillions? I didn't hear that. I heard them talking about same-sex marriage. I heard them talking about how to stop the flood of illegal immigrants coming into America. And since the government, the federal government, is going to do nothing about it, the state governments have to, state sovereignty by the same token, if state sovereignty includes granting people to form a contract no matter what their gender, oh no, we won't have any of that. So as you listen to the craziness, I just wondered, did anybody hear anything about the trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars and the trillions? Anything? Not that it really matters to you and me. I mean, those are abstract numbers. They don't mean anything to you, to me. They just don't. But they mean a hell of a lot to somebody or some group of somebodies. And they steal everything. They take everything. Who's doing that? Are the communists doing that? Are the socialists doing that? Huh? Is all that money being stolen by the socialists? Ooh, really? All both of them? I see, that'd be Bernie Sanders and me? Well, that leaves the only real suspects are the capitalist pigs that are stealing everything and won't be satisfied until such time as they've stolen everything. Every single thing. My. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. This hour is sponsored by Ian McShane. All 3 hours tonight. Thank you. Thank you very much. Phone lines are open. The number here is 877-996-2556 if you'd like to check in. The story that really got to me today was the FBI is giving significant new power to its roughly 14,000 agents, and this will allow them more leeway to search databases and go through household trash, use surveillance teams to scrutinize the lives of people who have attracted their attention. This is in the Times also. The FBI plans to issue a new edition of its manual called the Domestic Investigations and Operations Guide. The new rules add to several measures taken over the past decade to give agents more latitude as they search for signs of criminal or terrorist activity. Michael German, former FBI agent who is now a lawyer for the ACLU, argued that it was unwise to further ease restrictions on agents' power to use intrusive techniques, especially if they lacked a firm reason to suspect someone of wrongdoing. Does any of this remind you of anything? Is it just me? Huh? Under current rules, agents must open a line of inquiry called an assessment that allows agents to look into people and organizations proactively and without firm evidence for suspecting criminal or terrorist activity. Under the current rules, agents have to open such an inquiry before they can search for information about a person. Under the new rule, agents will be allowed to search anything and everything without making a record about their decision to do so. All secret. The new rules also relax a restriction on administering lie detector tests and searching people's trash. Really? Under current rules, agents cannot use such techniques until they open a preliminary investigation, which, unlike an assessment, requires a factual basis for suspecting someone of wrongdoing. You don't need that anymore. Agents soon will be allowed to use those techniques for one kind of assessment when they are evaluating a target as a potential informant. I don't know what any of this means. I don't understand these terms. A target, a potential informant, preliminary investigation, an assessment. But the bottom line, what it all means, is that when these new rules are issued, and they are to be issued very soon, whatever protections you thought you had under the U.S. Constitution are now pretty much all gone. The right-wing Supreme Court has made certain that those protections, as guaranteed by the framers, are gone now. They're just gone. The right to a speedy trial, a right against self-incrimination, the right to confront your accuser, the right to be safe and secure in your homes, your papers, your effects. All of that is gone. The First Amendment, absolutely destroyed. Bush destroyed that with the, remember the First Amendment zones? Remember that? First Amendment zones. Son of a bitch. So let me ask you, I haven't asked this for a few days. How much longer before we all say that's enough and, oh, I don't know, 15, 20, 30 million of us take to the streets and resist passively, quietly. I can imagine a nearly silent throng of 10 or 15 million people would be so intimidating. And on the other hand, if that throng of 10, 15, 20, 30 million people were to start screaming or chanting death to capitalism or end the war or... I think it'd be pretty powerful. You suppose that'll ever happen? Huh? So I wonder, as I always have, as I have been wondering now for ever since the Bush years, I guess, what's the tipping point? What is the precise event? Since it's not knowing that the president can now order targeted assassination of U.S. citizens, that was not the tipping point. The post-campaign lies that Barack Obama told. I got an email here. Where is it? Let me share it with you. Oh, okay. This is from Jamie in Maryland. Mike, of course all candidates lie or overpromise with flowery and sometimes even compelling rhetoric during their campaigns. It's all part of the sad game of our elections. But what about the promises made after one is in office, when politicians likely have greater security, security clearances, and access to more actual information about the state of things? Just one issue that still gets to me is the several times when President Obama said pretty forcefully in a variety of forums, like town halls, weekly internet sessions, that he would not sign any health care legislation without a robust public option. Remember that? How quickly that alleged promise fell off the cliff. And I push back when Obama apologists say that Mr. Obama never said that during the campaign, that he was for a public option. So a promise from a candidate for president apparently means more than one from the actual president? Of course, there are many more examples, but this one seems to surface frequently. Jamie in Maryland. Well, there is, I don't think there's any doubt. Is there? Is there any doubt? Does anybody have any doubt? Do you still have doubt? You still hoping, wishing and hoping that this president is going to develop a leadership style that overcomes the resistance from these brain-dead zombies that operate the Republican Party now? Or the monster financial rapists that now constitute all of what we refer to as Wall Street. Every single bit of it, every corner, every nook and cranny is run by a thief or a cartel of thieves. And we talk about OPEC. We talk about OPEC being really bad guys because, you know, they get together and decide not to increase production of oil. We don't need any more oil. There's a glut of oil on the planet. But we talk about them, whereas the financial cartel, the organization of money-destroying groups, what would that be? O-M-D-G. Omdig. that runs Wall Street, that runs the financial services industry, all of it, everything from insurance to banking to finance, all of it, every single bit of it, totally corrupt. But we don't talk about that corruption. We can't even get the Attorney General of the United States to get serious about prosecuting these bastards. Oh, one here and one there, and then up pops somebody like, what's his name? The guy that ran the big Ponzi scheme. Screw Ponzi schemes. What about the people that destroyed the housing industry? What about people that forced millions of Americans into foreclosure with their lies and their deceit? Okay, your phone calls when we come back. Oh, one open line if you want to call in, 877-996-2556. I've never seen you fall so hard. Do you know where you are? Truth be told, I miss you. And truth be told, I'm lying. When you see my face, oh, but did you help? But did you help? When you walk my way, oh, but did you help? But did you help? The man that's worth the damn and treats you well, then he's a fool, you're just
we fell in love. Now we wonder what we were dreaming of, smiling in the sunlight, laughing in the rain.
21 past the hour. Okay, let's do some phone calls. Steve is in Natick, Massachusetts. Is that right?
That's right, Steve the banker. I haven't talked to you in a while.
Oh, hey, Steve. It is Natick, right?
Yes.
Okay. Hi.
How's it going?
It's going, pal.
I know. Just the last couple of minutes that I've been listening to the show, you know, it's really horrifying where we are with the First Amendment and how this administration continues down the path of Nixon, Bush, and Reagan. I don't understand how he can do this, and you know, I'm terrified for my First Amendment rights. I've read the Federalist Papers once or twice, and I believe that Hamilton, as much as any of the three, would be horrified, terrified by what they're doing now. Absolutely terrified.
What do you see as the, I don't know if ultimate is the right word, but the ultimate outcome of the direction we're in? Because Obama is doing nothing to slow things down. As a matter of fact, he seems to be doing things to speed it up.
The ultimate end, you know, you've got to look at it as like a set of railroad tracks that simply are overlaid, that overlay each administration. It doesn't matter what kind of administration it is, Democrat, Republican, or anything in between or outside, it doesn't matter. The railroad tracks just keep pointing into one direction, and they're heading in that direction. The people who, quote unquote, control, run this country, the Eisenhower, industrial, military, whatever. And really, I think, but we really have seen it in the last couple of years, the last 10 years. We've seen, again, who owns this country and who controls it. It is the military. They run this country. That's what's scary. It's not a joke. It's truly who runs this country. We really do live under a military dictatorship, and it's not just a thing or a joke. One administration after the other, doesn't matter who it is, the same policies. I mean, we vote different people vote different people, but the same exact policies, you know. 40,000 people still in Korea, 30,000 in Japan. We're still bombing everybody from one side of Asia to the other.
But isn't that a function of the capitalist demand that these armies be put out there as tripwires or as early warning systems? I don't know. I think the military has a lot of influence, but don't you think that so-called Wall Street, you know, the real predatory capitalists, the ones who really determine U.S. foreign policy and then hand it off to the politicians to put it into play, don't you think they're really in charge?
Yes, and to follow the thought pattern, right, well, the first part of the complex is the military, but their partners, absolutely, the guys who enable them, in every kind of way, yes, Wall Street, and again, we see it. We see it because every single administration has the same exact group of five guys.
Okay, well, back to the question.
Goldman Sachs.
Right, but how or when do the American people react to this? What's it going to take? Jesus.
You know, my brother and I talk about this almost every day. He's actually sort of topped out because he used to have a single. He used to have a business. He no longer does. The answer to your question is, I think when it's too late. Unfortunately, I think right now it's a race to whether it's going to be too late or not, and that's why, you know, they're passing these laws now and as quickly as they can, because it is a race. It's a race to see whether they can get there before, you know, we
wake up,
learn what democracy is all about, like they did in Romania and Poland,
mm-hmm.
and Egypt and Tunisia, and somehow we forgot what it is, that God is a country,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's going to be very late, because look how many I've called you now over a number of years,
mm-hmm.
And how many jobs have I seen, how many businesses have gone under over the entire country. I'm doing 10 more tomorrow, so
I hear you. All right, Steve, listen, it's always good to hear from you, even though we never have a very uplifting conversation. But thanks, Steve. I appreciate you checking in. Do so more often, pal. We'll be right back.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. And this hour, like the other two, sponsored tonight by Ian McShane. Thank you very much. Jonathan is in Melbourne, PA. Hey, Jonathan.
Yeah, Mike Malloy, you and Kathy rule, and I want to say that Herman Cain and Sarah Palin and Newt Gingrich are so totally unqualified that it is amazing. And the only way that anyone could even consider them possible is because Reagan was elected twice, and that's it. Even after, like, Iran-Contra. It's disturbing. But I do want to add, and I know I said this earlier, but you and Kathy are amazing. I just want to say it before, you know, just wonderful.
Okay,
seriously.
Okay, thanks. That's it.
Yeah. Well, that I just wanted to emphasize that it's just shocking that people who, like Palin couldn't even finish an interview with Katie Couric. She couldn't even say which magazine she read.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what would she say during, like, an interview with Putin?
Well, I don't think you have to worry about Sarah Palin. She is not the least bit into public office. What she is into is getting paid for being a rock star. She's a rock star, and that's what she wanted to be. That's what she chose to be. She walked away from her job and became a rock star. And she's damn sure not going to give all that up just to be something as cheesy as President of the United States. You can trust me on that one, okay?
Yeah, well, thank you very much, Mike.
All right. I appreciate you checking in, Jonathan. Take care. Michael is in San Francisco. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm okay. How about you?
Good, good. Thank you for everything. I appreciate your comments on the barrel heads that appeared in New Hampshire tonight.
Oh, my God. Did you watch any of that?
Just a little bit. I had to go out on the veranda and read a decent book, which I want to recommend to you and your audience if you don't already know about it. But no, it was just too much.
Oh, it was just horrifying.
Yeah, it was. It really was. It was just showmanship, empty showmanship. But one thing, Ron Paul said two, I think, provocative things, or at least one, about if he were elected president, as if a miracle would ever happen. that he would bring the troops home,
right,
and that he would stop the military adventures of a system that needs military adventures to continue. So basically it's impossible. But I wanted to hear your comments on it. And the other thing was that he mentioned what Chalmers Johnson mentioned, mm-hmm, as far as blowback, that we have so angered people around the globe with our intrusions, military and otherwise, political and economic, mm-hmm, that they were so angry that they committed 9/11. Well, that's not true, as the Cheney Bush Clinton, in my estimation, and there's plenty of scientific proof for that. But nevertheless, Noam Chomsky, a radical, I think I could call him, mm-hmm, and Chalmers Johnson would agree with him. What are your thoughts on that? If on the premise of a miracle, Rand Paul ever got elected, what would really happen as far as
there are too many things, Michael, that Rand Paul also or Ron Paul carries around in his political philosophy that are antithetical completely to representative government. It just wouldn't work, especially when you're trying to govern a nation of 330 million people. Libertarians per se to me are utopians in the worst sense. Somehow they believe that with 330 million people living in one area, or even 1,000 people, that you don't need things like you don't need government support of institutions like libraries or public schools or post offices or fire protection or police protection or crime labs or public hospitals. I mean, just go right down the list. Libertarians are insane. They're just out of their minds. Now, they occasionally, a stopped clock is right twice a day. Occasionally, they'll say something that resonates with people who believe in justice. And that's what gets you. That's what gets me. Anytime anybody talks about ending these two senseless wars, the invasions and occupations and murder and the killing and the destruction and the death, if Glenn Beck came out in favor of withdrawing all the troops immediately from Iraq and Afghanistan, I would support him. I would say, oh my God, way to go, Glenn. Of course, Glenn is a bigger psychopath than anybody out there right now. So, you know, he drinks the blood he feeds on corpses and blood and, metaphorically speaking. I have to say metaphorically speaking because there's some people out there say, oh my God, he said Glenn Beck, the sainted Glenn Beck eats blood. Oh Jesus. As far as Rand Paul or Ron Paul, no, I think his ideas are dumb. They're just stupid. They're pointless. His ideas of ending the war. I mean, it's not that he's a pacifist. Libertarians are not pacifists at all. It's just that he doesn't believe that there should be public money spent sending troops to intrude into other people's business. Now, I will guarantee you, however, that if a foreign force marched into Texas and started murdering Ron Paul's constituents, he would probably turn to the federal government to throw them out. So I find libertarians for the most part to be nuts. I mean, just I can't think of a better term. They're just crazy. As far as getting the troops home, yes, you and I agree on that. It's absolutely necessary, and it also is something that probably will never happen. Michael, thank you. I appreciate you checking in. I don't know how, I occasionally get emails from people say, well, all you do is bitch and moan, you know, offering solutions. The sticky on this program is that we do not offer solutions. If you can come up with a solution, come up with it. That's not what this program's about. First of all, I think anyone who offers solutions at this point in the game, other than a massive refusal to participate in the game any longer, doesn't have his or her feet in the real world. What are you going to do? Vote? you're gonna go to the ballot box? Come on. There is no ballot box. What there is are electronic machines that can be jimmied any way that they want them to be jimmied, to be configured to produce whatever winner they, the ubiquitous they, want in terms of a winner. So what are you going to do? What are you going to do, Mr. and Mrs. America? Are you going to go vote? Is that what you think is going to end this insanity, voting? How'd that work for you last time, right? What do you think it'll take to stop the machine, short of millions of us sticking our arms, legs, and bodies into the machine, into the gears to make it stop? And I'm speaking metaphorically, you halfwits, sticking our bodies into the machine simply means 20, 30 million people pouring out into the streets and saying, we've had enough. That's how we've had enough. And, okay, then what happens, smart guy? Well, first of all, we go back to, at some point, we go back to, and it is regressive, go back to paper ballots. You hire people to count the votes. Do away with predatory capitalism. Just utterly and completely smash it into a million pieces. Enact laws in your society that completely prohibits that kind of behavior any longer, because it is anti-life. And if we're not all united in the idea of pro-life, and I'm not talking about fetus removal, I'm talking about real life. If we're not about, if we're not all pro-life, what the hell are we? Now, there are ways to find, there are ways to solve all this madness and to move to a rationalist society. Ron Paul is not the key to that. And Barack Obama certainly isn't. But I think the first thing that has to happen is that the machine has to be stopped. It just has to be brought to a standstill. It has to. And people far smarter than me have been saying this for five decades now. You have to stop the machine. You must make it stop. And there are ways to do that that don't include violence. I'm not suggesting that people put on these ridiculous-looking camo outfits and jump around in the woods like a bunch of bunny hoppers and say, boom, boom, bang, bang, I'm staying to be a soldier to overthrow the communist takeover of the United States. Oh, stop it, you morons. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about real, effective, mass demonstrations that say no. Before the hour, this hour has been sponsored by Ian McShane. As a matter of fact, all 3 hours tonight sponsored by Ian. Thank you very much. We do appreciate it. Phone calls. Maxwell is in Baltimore. Hey, Maxwell.
Hey, Mike. How you doing tonight?
I'm all right. How are you?
All right. I don't know about your viewing or your listening audience, but I read a book by Naomi Klein called The Shot Down.
Yes,
and she spells out what's going on in this country.
Absolutely. It's all right there, isn't it?
It's all right there. It talks about privatization of everything and all of the wealth going to a few and everyone else that suffers. It's been tested all over the world, especially in South America, with Allende.
Mm-hmm.
It's been tested in South Africa with the ANC trying to come to power. So the shock doctrine tells it all. If the listening audience get an opportunity to really want to know what's going on, all they have to do is read her book.
So what's the solution, Maxwell? What should we do? Do you agree that it's going to take enough people going to the streets to say, I'm just not going to participate in this madness anymore?
A combination of things. First, they have to make sure that they are informed and not misled by the politician by reading books like that. And when they go to the street, they cannot be misled there. But let us not mistake that the powers that be are prepared for that. Because
mm-hmm.
that's why we have a military, to intervene in that if, when it comes necessary.
And with the USA Patriot Act updated,
exactly.
And in effect, things to get pretty gamey. Well, let me ask you just personally, Maxwell, are you prepared to, if the time comes and you see...
Absolutely.
Your fellow citizens take to the streets. Are you willing to walk out the front door and join them?
Absolutely. I'm not a praying man. I believe in hands-on.
All right. I hear that. All right. Maxwell, thanks. I appreciate you checking in, okay?
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mike.
Take care. Mark is in San Francisco listening on Green 960. Hey, Mark.
How you doing? I'll answer that call, too.
Yeah, well, me too. I mean, you know, it's ridiculous for one person. Oh, I know the power of one and all this Oprah nonsense, but one person's not going to do anything. It's going to take 20 or 30 million people to let the power understand, look, you know, there's got to be a different way.
You know, Mike, if you look at what's happening in Wisconsin, this corporate agenda is being just pushed and pushed down their throats over there in Wisconsin. They are just, they're not stopping at anything. And that's a good indication right there. If people want to see an example of what this Republican Party is up to,
mm-hmm.
take a look at what's going on there, because they want to do that all over the United States. And that's right now the battleground, because those people are resisting it. But they're pushing and pushing and pushing. And that's what we're going to get if we get some more of these Republicans, well, especially a Republican president, because they want to just... Give, you know, like you said, they want to steal everything they can from us.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's where it's going, brother.
I think that probably the quickest way to confronting this machine that is devouring everything in sight is to have a Republican in the executive branch, to have both houses of Congress controlled by Republicans, let the American public feel the whip of real fascism. You know, it just seems impossible to convince anyone, by anyone, I don't mean by anyone, but it's impossible to convince millions of people that need convincing that we are on the cusp of fascism. It's here. So let it happen. And then, you know, maybe that's what it's going to take. Maybe it's going to take military personnel in the streets of America telling people to be quiet, shut your mouth, don't make waves, do what you're told. Maybe that's what it'll take in so many countries. That usually is the trigger. And I always thought that we Americans, since we are a nation of immigrants, that we had so many people in this country who either saw that kind of encroaching fascism firsthand, or their grandparents told them about it, or their great-grandparents, that we knew that religion had to be left out of politics, that fascism had to be defeated, that predatory capitalism had to be destroyed, and yet it's not happening. So maybe what we need is just a complete fascist government, and maybe that will cause the people to rise up. You think?
Well, you're right, Mike. But, you know, the other thing, too, is what's happened here is the media has been you know, running cover for these
fascist rats. Yeah, right. Well, forget them. I mean, the mainstream media is going to give nobody any help at all. There's some of the reporting that I still find intriguing and interesting and to some degree honest, but media, newspaper reporting or television reporting, they're not going to assist in anything. They're not going to fulfill their First Amendment responsibilities, and they're damn sure not going to be a leading force, as in so many countries. You know, you make your own media now, and we can do that. We make our own media.
No, you're right. You know, Mike, people just got to look at Wisconsin because that's what's coming. And like you say, maybe that's what it's going to take, a full dose of that, for people to really rebel and do what's got to be done to turn this country around and get the fascist hands off this country.
I hear you. Mark, thank you. I'm flat out of time, pal. I appreciate you checking in. I really do. Take care. Pooh, I hate Mondays. Man. I'll see you tomorrow night, all right? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.